So welcome back to Pax Europeana. We are now in the part about the EU days. By the way, it's the podcast about peace and enlargement and institutional reform of Europe and also of our liberal world order. And now it's about the 17th of December, and that's a very special day in Europe. I'm talking about the 17th of December 2005. That was the day when the Republic of Macedonia was granted the EU candidate status. That's basically one of the important assessments to be ready for negotiations and also to have basically fulfilled all the preliminary screening and to be seen as a worthy country for EU membership. It's not the start of the process, just to make it clear. It's a start of the detailed negotiation process normally. That means the EU Commission, which is a fact-based and very objective institution, they make rarely this kind of political judgments. What they do is they go in countries who want to apply for membership before there is already association agreement, before there is all this pre-screening, there is already a lot of technical assistance, and Macedonia was prepared from the point of independence in 91. That's on the 8th of September, there was the referendum and the independence day of Macedonia. And then we are talking 14 years of preparations, work, continuation, support, international assistance and all these things. Obviously, also Macedonia had a bit of a rough ride in these 14 years, I know that. It was also a major conflict in 2000 and then the Ohrid Agreement. Also, it was heavily affected by the Kosovo liberation intervention and NATO, basically, also by Milosevic, who caused all these things by driving out the Kosovo Albanians mainly into Albania and Macedonia. So definitely it was a rough period, and I will talk about all these things in more detail. But now let's come to the moment in 2005. When already, this was the great enlargement year 2004, don't forget. It was the year where 10 countries joined and also Slovenia joined, and that was very important. And also Bulgaria, neighboring Bulgaria and Romania joined already NATO in 2004. So the question was very clearly what to do with Macedonia. And Macedonia, it's actually a 200 years old question, what to do with Macedonia and European politics since the Vienna Congress. So nobody shall be surprised that that issue, how to integrate Macedonia, was somehow on the European agenda since the Vienna Congress. Short reminder. So we are now in 2005. And obviously George Bush was president, his re-election. He was absolutely doing so much for Europe with the 2004 enlargement of 7 countries of NATO, leading then to the EU enlargement of 10. And already at the celebration in the White House lawn, when the 7 countries were invited to celebrate together with George Bush in 2004, it was already present Croatia, Albania and Macedonia. Obviously, it was already there to celebrate, so it was very clearly meant that Macedonia will also join together with Albania and Croatia NATO and is then set on a reasonable membership. Let's see, 2009 was on the membership of Albania and Croatia, and 2013 Croatia joined already the European Union. So in a normal world, a world with European decency and American leadership, I think Macedonia would have been in the EU already together with Croatia. Because in many ways they are quite similar countries. There is not so much difference. They were together in Yugoslavia. They had also different experience with the crisis in the break of war. But they became independent both in 91. So there was actually much less war in Macedonia. The conflict in 2000 and 2001 was much smaller than the Croatian war. So ultimately there was also a settlement of the issues internally with the Albanian minority, with the Ohrid Agreement negotiated by the international community. And obviously Macedonia was very, very helpful to NATO and to the Kosovo Albanians, obviously. but especially to NATO in the important questions about access to Kosovo during the Kosovo Liberation War, and also during the afterbirth, and helpful with KFOR. And it was really, Macedonia is a friendly country to the West in all aspects. And so it was very clear that there should be, in a normal world, already membership in 2013 would be completely and easily possible in a normal world. Yeah. But unfortunately, since the great financial crisis, the election of Obama, his less interest in European details, this was all too small for a big man like him, and also his effort to leave Europe to the Europeans, a famous recipe for disaster and neglect once this is really done by the Americans. Yeah? Now America is back, and hopefully America is back also for Macedonia, because actually without American leadership, Macedonia will never join the European Union, because that's unfortunately the sad status of our affairs. So let's come a little bit more to the situation, how this all happens. Because in the 17th of December 2005, the world was still fine and everything was good. The European Commission has decided to open to grant the EU candidate status. That means also you get the funding lines of the instruments of pre-accession, you get technical assistance. You know, and the world was more or less really good, you know, and this was Europe. This was the finest moment. It was clear that we will move forward with integrating Macedonia in the European Union. But then came several things which unfortunately completely derailed all this agenda. First of all was, of course, the Bucharest summit and Karamanlis from Greece derailing the Bush enlargement agenda, in a very populistic, nationalistic, terrible effort to block Western unity and NATO on behalf of a Greek nationalist propaganda platform. That was unfortunately then also allowed to happen. I don't exactly know why this was slipping away, but it's not meant to be. And actually it took then 12 years and a very complicated period of instability in Macedonia in order to get this done. Now, on the 27th of March 2020, we can celebrate then Macedonia being in NATO. And what exactly was won by these 12 years, it is 12 years, yeah, from 2008 in Bucharest to the NATO accession, 12 years, lost in transition and in chaos, basically, because it was a very chaotic phase. I will talk about the details of exactly what happened in this period in a different podcast, because now I would like to focus on the immensity of how long it took. We lost 12 years, and now in the EU, is Macedonia already in the European Union? No, because you know what happened? Macedonia had to change its name. It was actually, to my view, a very decent thing to do, and Macedonia should have done that a long time, because the proposal for Northern Macedonia was already around since decades, and it is a minor change for a name. So that was actually very decent and should have been done already beforehand. Yeah? But nevertheless, yeah, Macedonia did this. Many people in Macedonia felt very much offended by this, because also in Macedonia there is nationalism, and also in Greece there is nationalism. So a decent way forward was found then in the Prespa Agreement, which is a very historic and one of the few really major achievements in the last 10 years, maybe the only real major achievement of European and American diplomacy in the last 10 years in the Balkans, or let's say maybe since the Brussels Agreement in 2013. That was also a major achievement. So let's between Kosovo and Serbia. But the rest was from that moment, unfortunately, going downhill. So, we are now at this Prespa Agreement. That's historic in 2018. Yes, before also Macedonia has concluded a friendship agreement with Bulgaria, also settled these things, and then Macedonia did a referendum, and that was positive. Obviously, with massive Russian intervention already, a major boycott campaign, that was a tragedy. And then what happened is the following, and here we come to the problem, and it's really very bad. There was also, just to explain again, first the referendum, then the treaty had to be ratified. Then the treaty was ratified with 2/3 in the Macedonian parliament. That was already really very complicated process. And it took a lot of complicated maneuvers to get this done because of the relations and the votes in the Macedonian parliament. And so this was done. Then it was a very close vote in Greece as well. It was 153 to 146. So in both parliaments, this compromise of North Macedonia and the attached Prespera agreement passed, but, you know, on a very complicated and small margin ultimately. So we are then in 2018, then both the final ratification and votes in 2019, and then came President Macron and vetoed in October 2019 the enlargement process of Macedonia and of Albania. I mean, this was really 1 year after all these very complicated votes in Skopje and in Athens, and a major common intervention in Macedonia and in Greece from the Western powers, comes the president of France and derails everything. I mean, you have to imagine this. You know, he is the young president of France. There is a decade-old issue, which is actually 200 years old. There is a massive effort from the West, from the EU, from everybody in the European Union, and of the US, also under Trump, don't forget. So there is this major effort, and there is this major progress. And there is a massive Russian operation against it. This is going until violence in the parliament and, you know, a lot of things. And then the French president vetoes the start of the negotiation to the European Union of a country which is already at that stage, it was very close already to NATO membership, because that happened finally only 3 months later, 4 months later, but already which was in the pipeline for EU since 2005. I remember on the 17th of December 2005, at this time Emmanuel Macron was still not even a parliamentary assistant in France. But later he became, with all this French politics, he became the president of France. And then he somehow felt it necessary to boycott then or veto the start of the negotiation. I mean, this says everything about European reliability. These were people in the Greek parliament and in Greek politics and in North Macedonian parliament and in politics who took great personal risks to vote for this. Because in a nationalistic context of the Balkan politics, everything is very emotional, and politics about this issue is very toxic. Otherwise, it wouldn't have been 30 years of international effort to help this situation to be settled. So the people who voted for the Prespera agreement, both in Skopje Parliament and in Athens Parliament, and they were really very courageous people. Because jingoism and nationalism is always the easy position to take, in all kind of tables, you will be applauded. And in the media, it's easy. Yeah, I'm for Greece, I'm for Macedonia. You know, that's a simple thing. To go in and somehow vote in favor of a complicated agreement, which has in the nature always a lot of compromises inside, is something which takes courage. It takes leadership. It takes morals. It takes cojones. And that was done. And it took also a major American and European effort to get it done. A lot of taxpayers' money, a lot of direct intervention. There's no doubt about it. And then came the French president and voted a veto in the EU Council for only the start of negotiations. Because Macedonia, don't forget, was already a EU candidate at that stage since 2005. And then he came and then he did that. Look, with this kind of presidents, we cannot build Europe. I think that's obvious. If you do such kind of positions and such kind of policy, basically serving Russian interests and serving nationalism in the Balkans and all the aggressive agenda behind it, then you are not a European personality. You shouldn't be in the EU Council. We can do without France in Europe. I repeat it, we don't need such a France, such badly led France in the European Union. Just stay in the customs union, economically fine. But if you are for this kind of positions, then you are not worthy to sit in the European unification process at the decision-making point. Because that's really completely reckless irresponsibility. Anyhow, so now by time all this has a little bit changed and, you know, there is now hopefully a kind of settlement. But I would like to reiterate, here's the point. From the end of the Cold War in Europe in 89, Poland was a free country again, had free elections, reformed itself and joined in 2004. That's exactly 15 years. And this is about what it takes from a communist dictatorship to a European Union country. If you do it decent, and if the EU is decent, and the American leadership is helping. This is what it takes, 15 years. In the Eastern German case, it was only 1 year. That was a very specific case. It was also in Greece. It took from the fall of the junta towards membership in 81, only 6 years. Good. There is different cases, you know. You have maybe very short cases like the Greek one. In the Spanish case, it was also from the death of Franco in 75 to 86. It's 11 years. So that's about what it takes, between 10, 15 years normally. Good for Croatia, if you take the end of the Croatian War in 95 as the turning point towards peace and unity, and then it took until 2013. That's as well from 95, it's about 18 years. Good, we can discuss, you know, between 6, 15 years. I would say normally from a country in a complicated post-war situation, from the point of peace, plus 15, it should take for EU membership. So Macedonia was at peace in 91 already, recognized then fully in 94 by the Americans. It took some time. Good. Then you say, okay, maybe you count the 2001 Ohrid Agreement as a starting point. Yeah, good. But plus 15 after Ohrid, when are we? Where are we? That means basically 2017. Okay. But it doesn't mean 2035, as Mr. Macron says. So here I want to make it very clear. When you see all the enlargement rounds up to now, it is a 15 years process and not a 30 years process. And there is no single possible argument to be made against Macedonia or North Macedonian's EU membership. Because administratively, obviously, the process of preparation is already happening all the time. It never fully stopped. Obviously, every government reforms and, you know, the progress is obviously there. Macedonian is, by the way, one of the best prepared countries in many key aspects when it comes to the digitalization of the public services, the digital cadastre, the taxation system. In every aspect of public administration, also in the rule of law, there is enormous progress. Obviously, the politics and the political divisions is a major issue in Macedonia. But why never the body politics came to healing? Because of all the injustice of the rejection in NATO, of NATO and of the EU. Because inside, when already NATO membership would have happened, the big question would have been clarified. Russian intervention would have been much more or less. So it is a failure of Bucharest. But it's also an unforgivable failure of Mr. Macron, of President Macron, to do this veto. And we have to now, in this period from 2021 to 2024, to fix all these issues and to fix them fast. Because we cannot allow instability to reign in the Balkans. And we have invested heavily in the progress, in the Prespera agreement, and in all these attached efforts. Yeah? And, you know, it cannot be that one president comes in Paris completely irresponsible, reckless. I repeat it. It's completely irresponsible recklessness. And then to derail a major joint American-European effort for peace. And basically the only one which is successful with NATO membership. So here it is. Macedonia, please adopt the euro immediately in 2021 and then also European Union integration and voting for the European Parliament for the citizens of North Macedonia already in 2024 together with Albania and Montenegro. This is without any alternative. And everybody, and especially Paris, yeah, there is no way this can be blocked. There is simply no way. But for this, obviously, we need America. We need America to tackle Macron. I repeat, Biden, you have to tackle Macron. We can unfortunately not do it very easily. But his 2018 and 19 positions on Macedonia and Albania has shown that he is an irresponsible, reckless politician. And he is a danger for peace in the Balkans. He has to be addressed. It's absolutely clear. Please, this is the priority. Because peace in Europe has to work in small puzzle pieces. This is the reality of Eastern Europe. We have to focus concretely country by country. And here it's very clear. Bosnia in NATO, I made this podcast already, but here these three countries of Albania, Montenegro and North Macedonia, obviously they have to do their part, adopt the euro, that's the goal, and continue also with all the reforms of the rule of law and the corruption and all the other things which are ongoing. This is a decade-long effort already, or three decades in the case of Macedonia. And with great progress already on the ground, and everybody who reads enlargement reports or goes into the detail knows that there is enormous progress in transparency and accountability. It's basically the big political questions where we are stuck. And here, absolutely, we need America to be back, but not in the Balkans, but in Paris. And if necessary, in Athens as well, and in Sofia. Because don't forget, the recent scandal was then that after the, the whole complicated process with Greece was already handled, then came suddenly in Bulgaria and started with his own fragilities to be exported towards Macedonia. And given that that is also a very complicated history involving Yugoslavian past, the Paris Peace Treaty, and the way the Balkan Wars were won or divided the land of Ottoman Turkey, and even maybe a much longer history of this whole Macedonian revolutionary organization and how basically the resistance against Turkish colonialism in the European continent was organized in the end of the 19th century. But really, seriously, is this not much better to be dealt in kind of historic discussions or on Twitter? Do we really need to deal with that in the level of membership? Do we really need to blackmail our neighbors to impose our narratives on them? Do we not have any kind of mechanisms other than this to deal with it? I understand, obviously, the politics also in Bulgaria. That's again the same Balkan nationalism and jingoism and kind of hooray patriotism, which is for some people useful to catch votes, obviously, yeah, in the upcoming Bulgarian election. But it's again, you know, you see the irresponsibility of the European politics for itself, because it would be so easy to give Bulgaria what it really wants. The Bulgarian leadership, and that was also the Bulgarian voters want, really. They want to be in Schengen fully as a member, like they should. They want to have all the same rights like everybody else in the European Union. And we have withheld this from Bulgaria for too long. And we have basically punished the Bulgarians for their elite's failures. And then, of course, this elite is then, because they don't produce real tangible results for the people, is going what all elites do in that moment when they don't have a lot to show, is in kind of jingoist, nationalist, kind of anti-foreigner rhetoric. And that's in that case, obviously, the anti-Macedonian rhetoric. And you always, in this very complex entanglement of the Balkan borders since 1912 and the independence in 1908, and you know how these whole borders were done during all these wars, the Balkan Wars, first and second, and the World War One, and the settlements in Paris, and the Second World War, and then Yalta, and all these kind of efforts, and the communist. And you know, you can always find for everything an argument. Because everything has changed so often and everything is so toxic and the populations are so mixed. So when you focus in on the year 1878 or of the Berlin Congress or in 1912 or in 1921, or you know, you can argue basically everything. Every land border change and every population exchange has already happened. And you can find a kind of reasonable sounding argument for everything. But this has to come to a stop. Operators in politics, like who use this, have to be stopped by a prime authority. And as if we in Europe are doing as if it would not concern us, like we would be powerless to rein in Bulgarian nationalism, when all these countries receive at the same time, I would like to repeat a bit the economic aspect, Greece, at the same time when it stopped NATO accession of Macedonia, was producing an unbelievable, terrible bankruptcy in that period. While they kept up the veto on Macedonia, they were consuming double digits of billions of European taxpayers' transfers in the whole crisis from 2010 to 2015. And a lot of generosity in all aspects from us. The Bulgarians, not only now, but constantly a massive subsidy receiver. All of them, and the whole project of the European Union obviously built on solidarity, meaning subsidies, meaning better living standards in such peripheral and poor regions like Greece and Bulgaria, which have never any chance to develop without the common market, our common security, and our common solidarity. It's not their fault. That's the geography. That's the region they live in. They need this external framework much more than we need it in Western Europe. And, you know, that's absolutely the fact. So they get all this. But nobody calls for a kind favor not to make a big problem and not to lead to war or not to veto something. I mean, you have also to imagine the kind of surprise, I think, in the eyes of George W. Bush in Bucharest when he kindly asked Karamanlis, who was at that time already a very desperate economic actor, subsidized since 81 and only on American request, on Reagan's request in the European Union in 81. Let's not forget that, yeah? You know, it was definitely America securing Greece since the Civil War, winning the Civil War for the Greeks, yeah? Ensuring it's not a communist country. And so on and so on. Let's never forget all these aspects. And then the Greek prime minister saying, "Ochi," to George Bush in Bucharest, and the attached disaster. But it's the same way Borisov saying now no to in December 2020, was now recently, towards the start of negotiation of Macedonia. And, you know, these are countries, I have been in all of them and I love them all. They are very beautiful countries, you know, great people. But, you know, that their political elite is allowed to object to really important geostrategic position while at the same time receiving double digits of billions of transfers from the European Union. And I don't say we should buy all these decisions, but solidarity is a two-way street. When we send billions, there must be peace on the return. Because you cannot send billions one way, and then when you call, "Hello, Sofia, hello, Athens, hello, Skopje," and the result is, "Dit, we don't listen." I mean, and then we maybe have to send the cruise missiles again and make peace by military means. Or we lose decades and hundreds and thousands of people come additionally as migrants towards Western Europe and so on and so on. And we lack all these opportunities of progress in our institutions because of specificities of the political system of Greece and of Bulgaria. At the same time, in any crisis, now again, in the SURE is the instrument of subsidizing during the corona crisis, but also with the recovery fund where we just have now 750 billion additionally put. It's anyhow not enough. And I'm for more solidarity for Greece and for Bulgaria. Don't get me wrong. But I'm also, and that must be the European interest, to be also for European solidarity for North Macedonia. Just because one country was not communist and therefore urgently invited in the European Union like Greece or the other country like Bulgaria was a very important country, obviously, for us geostrategically, like they all are very important geostrategically, because that's simply a very important area in our relation with Russia and Turkey. So we got it in 2007. There was a lot of corruption. We have to clean up everything, and it is still a very highly corrupt country, unfortunately. And we have patience, we send money, we support, we reform, we build all this infrastructure. And then shoot at the council, Borisov, the prime minister, and says, by the way, we have now elections. I didn't get what I want recently. It was not enough billions. So I vote no. And it's in the right of the Bulgarian nation to say no to North Macedonia because it was never a nation, blah, blah, blah. I have some reasons historically. And everybody else in Brussels looks on. Hey, Boris, what can we do for you? I respect you. You are such a great leader. But we can do nothing. Nobody of the whole European elite is able to call him and say, get a grip. 1, 2, 3. You have 3 minutes now to get this veto off the table or we cut your funding. And you never turn up at the EPP power meet, political bureau ever again. And no photos anymore with you. You have understood? Nobody says that. Everybody says, yeah, we have to understand, because they don't know the history. They have not learned the history of the Balkans. And ultimately, they don't care for new enlargements. And they think it's anyhow too early. Let's wait another 20 years. And let's wait for an American president who really pushes for this. Yeah, because only America, it seems to be a responsible actor in the European periphery. And Europe has failed the European periphery again and again, always appeasing the bullies like Serbia and Russia and not helping the countries to really get into the structures of defense, security and prosperity. And then it is always to wait until America is back, until America sorts out the things. And then the same politician says, yes, no, you know, if Biden called me from Macedonia, okay. And so far we are. And that's the reality of our European unification process at this stage. Not that it is bad, on the other hand, but we lack leadership and courage, and we lack beliefs and values, and we lack a little bit of strategy. And it will be all much better, because America is back again, and Macedonia, please adopt the euro now and join the European Union and send good parliamentarians for the 2024 elections. And be sure about it's possible. It can be done. And if it's not done, it's a tragic mistake. And mark my words, all future crises in Macedonia can be blamed exactly to the indecision of Berlin and Paris and others who have supported such bad policy of rejecting and delaying. And never forget, yeah, Macedonia now is already longer EU candidate country than Poland was from the transition of 89 towards membership. And there is something wrong, and it's on our side and the mistake. It's on the European Union side, the mistake. It's Germany and Paris to and France to blame, mainly Paris, and this must be rectified immediately. So I call for Macedonia to be full member of the European Union in 2022, maybe 3. But for sure, the parliamentarians have to be sent already to the European Parliament for the European Parliament election of 2024. And that's absolutely together with Montenegro and together with Albania, because all three are NATO allies. And that means something. At least it means something for America under Biden. And that's important. If we have no kind of courage in European Union, then at least, you know, let us basically be sorted out by the American president, and shame on all European politicians who have forgotten the values of the common house of Europe and all the great speeches of the 90s and the 2000s. And now they have seemingly been forgotten. But okay, I'm sure that Joe Biden has not forgotten any of it. And he has not forgotten European weakness in the Balkan Wars. And he will remind everybody on that position. So I call again, all three NATO members adopt the euro. Montenegro has already. So Macedonia, Albania adopt the euro and join the European Union immediately. We lost enough time already. Thanks for listening.